couple more minutes with Thomas Laird, the author of The Story of Tibet, Conversations with the Dalai Lama. He is our guest. Bill Russell?
Geography. I don't want to get away from this. China is suffering serious environmental problems, not the least of which is desertification. It's drying up.
Yes. Gobi Desert is growing by leaps and bounds.
Again, what
others.
I didn't realize is how many of the rivers in China originate, as you might think, in the Himalayas.
From the Tibetan Plateau.
From that plateau, because that's
all
where the
great rivers of China come from Tibet.
So this is not, you know, it's not just narrowly economic. It is in many ways a sort of existential challenge, because water and water worldwide, knowledgeable people think, is going to be a major, even more important ultimately
than oil.
So the Chinese, it's not just that they're mean. there is some serious national interest in controlling the source of that water.
When you have a billion people, they need water.
And they're running out.
So one of the plans afoot now is there's two rivers that come off, the Yangtze and the Yellow River, come off the eastern edge of the Tibetan Plateau and down through Chengdu and then out to sea around Shanghai and Hong Kong. Those two rivers come down through there. And so there's a third river that in Tibet that comes around and snakes around and drops into India. Now, at one point, it's called the Brahmaputra. At one point, that river in Tibet is within a few hundred miles of one of the rivers that goes into Tibet, into China. So there's now talk of putting a tunnel through the mountains and shifting an entire river out of India into China.
The Indians will take that amiss.
The Indians will not be happy about that. It's not only China, of course, it's the entire nation of Bangladesh is solely dependent on that water. So
in every possible way.
Yeah, and so there's very serious issues. I mean, remember, Lanchao is one of the most polluted cities on Earth right now, right up against the Tibetan Plateau. The resources of the plateau and its strategic importance cannot be underestimated, and China will do anything to retain it.
I want to close, in addition to this realistic perspective on global geographic politics, I also want to carry forth the kind of real openness and hope that His Holiness does. Mm. There's a word you introduced me to that was brand new to me, which I'm going to pronounce as Rime. Is it
Rime?
Rime. See? I could. The notion that His Holiness adheres to many kinds of perspectives, in fact, I think, is part of what you're telling us in this 10 years of work that you've done, that we must begin to open instead of close.
Yes.
Our perspectives, our allegiances, our sense of how do you get along on this planet if we're to get along on this planet together at all. Mm. Did you come away with that sense of being empowered?
His Holiness is, the Tibetan word Rime is a philosophical movement in the late 19th century, where different people of different sects would say...
Oh, that would be S-E-C-T-S.
Yeah, different orders of Tibetan Buddhism, the Nyingma and the Gelugpa, the different orders would try to unify all the different orders. And the 13th Dalai Lama was a big proponent of Rime, because as the Dalai Lama, he's the leader of one of the orders of Buddhism, but at the same time, he's the leader of all of Tibet. So the Dalai Lamas and the 14th Dalai Lama is a big believer, and he's taken initiations in all the different orders, the traditions of all the different orders, and works to minimize the difference. Now, when he comes onto the global stage with that, he translates that into English as pluralism. And so that he finds wisdom in all religious traditions and doesn't want to say anything that would ever cause conflict with any other religious tradition. He says, look, as a Buddhist, I find these Buddhist teachings, for me, this is the one true truth. But I understand that for other people, Christians or Muslims or Jews, that they will have the one true truth. So thereby, we arrive at a position of pluralism, where each of us must accept the fact that others have other beliefs, and we need to work with them for the common unity. So in his mind, war is like dinosaurs. nationalism fighting about is like something about it's something that should be dying off. The future, if humans have a future, the future is in working together, in finding the common good, in working through compassion and wisdom rather than greed, anger, ignorance, lust, and pride. And he, when you're with him, whenever I get excited about the politics or something, he always very calmly reverts back to what the Dalai Lama brings to the world stage is about who he is. His approach to all the problems is through one of wisdom and compassion and human kindness, caring for other people. He always puts that first. And he says that all the problems we face in this world, if we would put that first, that we could solve them, just like Martin Luther King, just like Gandhi, just like Jesus, just like Buddha. There's only one message of wisdom, which is that treat your neighbor as you would be treated. You know, let's all work together. We don't have to be divided. These problems that we face are challenges that we... His approach to this is very different than ours, and that comes from his upbringing in this ancient Buddhist religion, which has really inculcated a deep respect for, you know, the wisdom inherent in each of us and the fact that we can work together if we'll just try to do that.
We should try to do that.
We should.
Thank you, Thomas Laird.
Thanks for having me.
The Story of Tibet, Conversations with the Dalai Lama, can help change everything. We applaud Thomas Laird's tenacity in making this story accessible and the Dalai Lama's age-old wisdom. We can solve our problems when we care for others and when our common good wins out over greed, ignorance, lust, and pride. I'm Paula Gordon. I wish you well.